not necessarily.
Everybody pick a different seat.
You don't want to sit over here too long, Bobby.
You like your corner?
I hereby call the Consolidated Subcommittee of the Common Council. The time is now 7:44. Mr. Clerk, will you please read the roll?
Alderman Emmanuel Sanchez.
Here.
Alderwoman Shirley Black.
Present.
Alderwoman Suzanne Bolinsky.
Present.
Alderwoman Toni Lynn Collins. Alderman Louis Salvio. Alderman Adam Platash.
Here.
Alderman Daniel Salerno.
Here.
Alderman Jamie G. Antonio.
Present.
Alderman Robert Schmedley. Six present. Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum. And would you also seat Alderman Wilfredo Pabon?
Read into the record that Alderman Pabon has been seated for the Consolidated Subcommittee. Mr. Clerk, will you please read the record? I'm sorry, will you please read into the record the notice sent to the town clerk?
Yes. Notice to the town clerk. The Consolidated Subcommittee of the Common Council will hold a special meeting on Wednesday evening, May 20th, 2015, at 7:30 p.m. in the Council Chamber City Hall for the following. Agenda Resolution 33071-1, General Fund Budget for Fiscal Year 2015-2016. Resolution number two. Number 33072-1, Budget for Special Revenue Funds and Enterprise Funds for Fiscal Year 2015-2016. Three, Resolution 33073-1, Capital Improvement Program Budget for Fiscal Year 2015-2016, LOSIP.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk.
Okay. And no one signed up for the public participation.
Perfect. Okay, first item on the agenda is Resolution Alderwoman Bolinsky.
Because I think, did we, maybe it is. Do we have the general fund budget come before us before? Oh, okay, first thing. Then I make a motion to, for the purpose of the discussion, to accept Resolution 33071-1.
Second.
Accepted by Alderman Bolinsky, seconded by Alderman G. Antonio. Discussion?
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Bolinsky.
There are a few folks here this evening from Public Safety. Mr. DeMeo's here as well from Parks and Rec, and we have Mr. Wolf from Finance, just in case there is any other financial questions. We appreciate him, and also Mr. Perugini. We appreciate both of them. What I'd like to do is start out with Mr. Donnelly and ask him a few questions with regards to telecommunications.
Mr. Donnelly?
We could.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Mr. Donnelly. I know that there is that it has been brought to our attention that there is some need for restoration of funds with regards to telecommunicators that by miscommunication were taken out of your budgetary request. So what I would ask, if maybe you run us through those. I
sure.
See that $150,000, $157.64 was taken from full-time salaries and $17,373 from part-time salaries. So maybe if you could walk us through what
yes.
that does and what the need is.
Well, if we lose the three full-time positions, we will, on some shifts, go to three people on the first shift and three people on the second shift, and it makes it pretty difficult to operate that dispatch center if somebody needs a bio break. We simply can't do that. The data that I presented to the Board of Finance indicates we really need 24 full-time people. I asked for 19, and the reason that I did that was that we have been, we've been pretty successful with a part-time program, and but some of those part-time people are starting to leave us. We did this as an apprentice program, and I paid for it out of a grant. Now, recognizing the city's difficulty, fiscal difficulties, I actually, instead of having that grant recorded, it is now recorded as revenue. So it's $160,025, and that pays the entire cost of those three positions. So this is not like it's new spending, it's spending that was existing as full-time, part-time positions. So I'm not sure people realize how busy the dispatch center is. The Board of Finance, I went through it in a lot of detail, and I won't compel you to listen to that, okay? Just to give you an example, we take 47,000, about 48,000 911 calls a year. We take 168,000 calls to 8263,000. And then we make or extend 87,000 other calls outbound for a total call volume of 303,806. And we are the eighth largest city in Connecticut, but we have the fourth highest call volume. And per dispatcher, we have the highest per dispatcher call volume. So those folks really work hard in there. And it is not an easy job. When you call and ask for something, you're almost always 100% polite. But when people are stressed, they scream into that phone. It's tough. And some are unreasonable. You know, they don't even want to tell you where they are, but they want you to get somebody going there. So it really is an issue. So, and on top of that, we have given them new duties over the last decade. They do emergency medical dispatch. They're supposed to triage all those calls, offer pre-arrival instructions. The work we do for the police is more complicated than ever because their requirements are greater. They ask for more and more information over the radio, reasonably so, too. So as time moves on, the duties get more complex, and our burden gets greater. I think they've adapted pretty well, and they're certainly not perfect, and some of our systems need some tweaking, for sure, but you know, some of them are reasonably new, too. So I think we will get those all resolved and, you know, in the next 18 months or so, but we can't do it without people sitting in the chairs. So, you know, it was not easy getting legislation passed to have the state provide that subsidy, but we were able to accomplish that. And I have asked them for, there's currently a notice of proposed rulemaking, which will end up before the Regulations Review Committee at the legislature. And I've asked for a little bit more. And hopefully we'll be successful. I'm not sure we will, but I'm hopeful that we will. So, I mean, it isn't a lot more. It's about $35,000 more. But that would offset some of our costs associated with housing large elements of state systems at in our public safety server room. I don't know whether you're aware of it. We are one of seven hubs on the state of Connecticut fiber optic network. We're the only one in a municipality. And we also operate one of the two major switches for next generation 911. It's one in Norwalk and one in New Britain. And one of every two calls for 911 in Connecticut goes through our switches. So so our facility is really critical to the state's infrastructure. on delivering Next Generation 911 service. Now, we have had that service up and running now for about a month. We're the first site in Connecticut to get that. We have been the pilot site for 911 initiatives, e-citation, many, many other things over the past decade, and we will continue to be. And one of the reasons is that we get a large volume of calls, but not so overwhelming like a Bridgeport or a Hartford or a New Haven, where they really couldn't adapt to it if there was a problem. So our employees have gotten pretty good at finding what the errors are and whatnot. We report those out, and that helps the other 104 public safety answering points in Connecticut. So I'd appreciate it if you could find a way. I mean, I think the dollars are there already to cover the $150,000 difference. And, you know, the mayor and I had a discussion about this, and, you know, I don't think she would have made those adjustments if she thought there, except that she thought there was no people in those positions.
And I think, Mr. Donnelly, through you, Mr. Chairman, I think what the issue was, if I recall, when you and I had the discussion, is that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but the three folks who are listed in the part-time employee space are moving into full-time roles. It's because of the part-time employees are used for your training program to see if they can do the job, and then once they do, they're promoted into a full-time position. And so their names aren't up there, but over to the right, there's zero. Their names are there, but there's zero salary in part-time, and the salary was put in full-time because that's the expectation is through your program that they're going to be the full-time people. Exactly. So I think that's where the confusion was. They were listed as vacant when they really weren't vacant. It was, they were shown in part-time still, but their salaries were zeroed out there because they were going to be taking over the full-time salaries, correct?
Correct. And when I, just so you know, when I filled out the form, I put them in as pending. What I didn't know is that IFAS, the city accounting system, does not have a status of pending.
Mm.
So pending became vacant quickly.
So, it's all in the details.
Yes.
Okay, so what you're asking for is for us to restore the $157.64 as well as the $17,373 reduced, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I do have I just wanted to ask because you talk about Next Generation 911, and I would hope that there's no one sitting at any desk up here that doesn't realize the difficult job that your telecommunicators have to face every day. And if they don't, I am sure that you would be willing to let them sit and listen to what goes on in that office in the police station. But one of the things that I wanted to ask, which is my understanding that part of this Next Generation 911 is taking text messages for 911 as well as potentially video. Can you just enlighten us on that?
Right. Next Generation 911 is a national standard. It's been implemented in three states. Connecticut is the third one. And it will eventually allow persons who want to contact 911 to do so by sending a text message. Now, in fact, we could actually do that today, but the feature's not being broadcast to anyone, and it's not being made available to any dispatch center. They did ask me, by the way, just so you know, if I would do that for the whole state, okay, until such time as the other 104 public safety answering points were stood up, and I declined. I didn't, you know, that would be huge liability for us, just not worth it. The governor would like to have it up sooner than later. So the schedule to do the remaining, as I mentioned, there are 10 public safety answering points that were in the pilot, the other ones will start to roll out now starting in 2 weeks. And I believe it will take the better part of a year to do those. And at the end of the year, then, end of the project year, what will happen is they will turn up Next Generation 911. Now, it may be possible that when they get about halfway through that, they will turn it up anyway and route the ones that don't have not gone up yet to a state police troop. Okay, so that may be possible. And then when it's all done, they'll cut them all back. And then after that, it'll be a little ways after that, people will be able to send us video. Now, that changes the dynamic of how dispatch works rather significantly when you get to see things in real time. And so I have to tell you that it's probably going to require more resources, because it isn't that you'd get one call about an incident. You might get 50. And let's say they're all sending you video. What you really want to be able to do at that point is get the best video and send it out to the responders so they're seeing it as well. So all of these things have to work together. So what we have to do is build on our mobile systems so that you can't have the cop looking down, driving distracted to see what's going on at the scene. So you really want to provide them a heads-up display. And those are becoming, while they were $8,000 a few years ago, we're now seeing them for $500. So it could be right on the dashboard, okay, sitting up there. And the police officer could see the video of what's going on as he's driving to the scene. So all of those things are useful, and there'll be more innovative measures that will come with that. The ability to interrupt someone. But to some degree, you know, a person is using their smartphone to send video, they might not have it aimed in the correct position. Or you're already seeing that image. So our call taker might have to say, hey, would you mind turning your phone to the right, okay, so that you can catch the people over there, so we can get that description instead of just staring at the scene. So all these things, we're going to require more extensive training of our folks, and then the whole piece of how fast we can process this, get it out there, and the like. So there's new challenges coming.
Thank you very much for that.
Any further discussion? Alderman Giantonio.
Mr. Chair, through you. Thank you, Mr. Donnelly, for coming tonight. Can we talk about overtime for a minute? Looking at this, it looks like we have department requests for $80,000. We're already double that this year.
Right.
Would restoring these positions offset the decrease in that overtime budget, or is that 80 grand kind of?
You won't save a nickel. The three, as I mentioned, the responsibility, really, we need 24. So we have choices. We can either let the phone ring longer, which, by the way, we'll then run the risk of losing the grant. And that did happen one other time. We didn't lose the grant. But if we get under, there's a state standard that says you have to answer 95% of the calls within 10 seconds, okay, of the 911 calls. Now, we get 96% at the moment. But that's because we're filling the chairs at the rate of five people on the day shift, five people and then four on the midnights. Now, we're really not funded in here for that, okay? So we have to use overtime. At some point, there's a balance between overtime and the benefits you have to pay. And as long as it's less than a few people, it's worth it to pay the overtime. But you reach an equilibrium at some point where it's better to have the full-time staff. I don't want to say we're there yet, and I'll continue to look for alternate sources of money. There is no money in any new revenue proposed for alarm management, but we are going to start that program finally, and I'm hoping we can do it by September. I've been talking with Alderwoman Belinsky about that and the mayor, and everybody's in favor of doing that. We do have a high rate of false alarms in New Britain, and I think we can make some money on that. So we've been more aggressive with alarm registration. We no longer let people have it for free. And we make them pay the $25 and the businesses pay $50. So we get a little bit of money that way. Doesn't go into my budget. I've been putting it in Chief Wardwell's because I don't happen to have an alarm account. So he's got these accounts and he takes it and he's grateful, I think. So he doesn't get to spend it either, but you know, I wish I had a better answer that says, sure, I mean, if you give us three more people, we'll scratch the 80,000. Here's where overtime cost us money. Our employees get paid extra for holidays. So no matter whether they're working or not. So we have no choice but to pay them. And that's an overtime ticket.
So again, through you, Mr. Chair, do you think that the 80,000 for overtime is reasonable? It, you know, provided we restore those positions? Because, I mean, I'm looking and your average has been, you know, in the 150s, and we have this at 80, so just trying to.
And right, so I think you see that what I've been trying to do is I haven't gone over, although I think I might go over this year, but I have a way to cover that. And the simple fact is that there isn't enough money in this budget to do it the way we think it ought to be done. I think if you try to tip $80,000, I mean, I really wanted 20, and you know, we kind of haggled it out with 19. So, you know, I'll go back and visit her later on this. So, partway through the year, we'll see how things go.
Alden.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
For you, Chair. Mr. Donnelly, what would happen if these positions don't get funded?
Well, first of all, you can expect speed of answer. We're gonna end up with less people in the room. That's going to impact on our ability to serve the citizens of New Britain, as well as the providers. I will shut down the PD Info operation so that the police will have to go through the regular police dispatcher for any information stuff, and that's going to delay activities there. We will have one call taker and two dispatchers on some shifts, and that won't work.
Does everybody know what PD Info is? It's a separate channel so that the police can then key up and they can have the dispatcher respond to specific items or issues if they need to, you know, run a plate or something like that. So right.
All the towing goes through
right,
that.
Right, all the towing. So it's important for them to have access to that. It gives them a more expedient response.
Well, if you lose those three, how many employees would you have?
16.
16? And you're supposed to have 24?
24. By the way, I didn't make up how we get to 24. It's done based on a national accepted approach by APCO.
Okay. Well, if you don't get funded for this, your overtime's going to go sky high, ain't it? So no matter.
Exactly right. No question about it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Donnelly.
Alderman Salerno.
Yeah. Through you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Donnelly. And I just want to preface my comments by saying that I appreciate getting this information, and it's a learning process for me. I say it all the time, but you're the specialist. I'm the generalist, and I need to ask those questions accordingly. You mentioned the issue of the stations, if you will, for the 911 sites, Norwalk and New Britain being the two.
Right.
I guess that's a hardware, software issue. Obviously, it's not about positions, but it's about the networking process and how that technology works. Is there any way, or maybe not, in terms of could you tell us what cost it is involved with being one of the two for one? Obviously, it looks like it could be a potential load if one out of two 911 calls are coming through these two stations. And the question is there any subsidy options? And that is there any way that the state or anywhere else looks and says, because of that, we need to be able to somehow subsidize that burden that this particular platform, if you will, handles?
Right. I want to let me clarify something. Just because one out of every two 911 calls goes through equipment in our dispatch center or in our server room does not mean we have to answer it.
Okay. That's why I'm asking.
Right. It's the other million or so calls, 911 calls that come into Connecticut annually that go through that switch. So it's a big piece of equipment. It's an entire rack. And then there are two entire racks for the state fiber network. And then there are two more racks of equipment for 911. And then there's uninterruptible power for some of that that's provided by the state. But here's what we do for them. First of all, with great difficulty and with enormous pain, we somehow try to keep the room cool. That has been a bigger challenge than you might imagine. It fails regularly in the winter, okay? If we could open the window, we'd get away with it. But the windows don't open. So we pay for cooling. We also pay for the security. We would have that anyway. We do some monitoring of it for them. On the other hand, we are not responsible for maintaining it. Once in a while, they'll ask us to do a little something, switch something around, or go check a setting and whatnot. But they are really good partners. And I went to them asking for a subsidy to deal with those costs. And they actually extended the amount of time that it was allowed to submit comments. So I ran those past the mayor. We sent them in, and I'm hopeful, since it really would only be one place, New Britain, that would get that specific contingent subsidy, that they'll review that favorably.
Through you, Mr. Chair, again, and I think that's part of, you know, where I'm always looking for, I'm sure think that we all are looking for, somewhere where we can either cut something or increase what other funds and sources of funding we can get to accomplish things. And even though it may not be the $80,000 in terms of the overtime, but if that continues, and it sounds as if you're moving in the right direction, certainly would like to be aware when that happens. Or is there other avenues, or are there other avenues as you said, it's a piece of equipment that eventually something's going to happen to that equipment. I mean, over time, it needs repair, as you said. It could fall apart. It becomes archaic in terms of the system. Who covers that? And I think that's what I'm interested in. If that is the case, fine. As long as there's pursuing it, we know that can happen. That's important.
We are pursuing it. There are a number of folks who would like to see the way the subsidy formula is done amended significantly. The former director of the 911 system in Connecticut, George Poharalak, was asked to comment on it, and he suggested that the subsidy be limited to the eight large cities and the regional dispatch centers. Now, that's how it was originally created, but he was going to change. He suggested changing the formula. So our subsidy would have gone up by $100,000 under that approach, okay? And when the legislation first went in, only seven cities got it, okay? And New Britain was the seventh largest city. So the legislation actually originally said over 70,000 people. So, you know, I represented the cities on that legislative task force. So that was the first time we got a subsidy. So we started out getting about $58,000. Okay. And 18 years later, we get $160,000. So that's not bad. It's not perfect. But it has helped us over the years. Okay, it's paid for a lot of things. And but we've never used it to pay for people. So this time, given the city's fiscal plight, I thought it was appropriate that we do that. And you know, I don't really like doing that because I think it takes away from some of the technology opportunities that are in the future. But I'll see if I can hustle some of those.
Thank you. Appreciate the, those comments. It helps me to understand the process overall. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you for your consideration. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Mr. Donnelly.
Alderman Sincere.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask Chief Wardwell a few questions, if possible.
Good evening.
Good evening, Chief. Thank you for coming this evening. And I know that there were some changes in the budget made to police administrative services and full-time salaries. And I just, I know you wanted an opportunity to address the council to talk about those changes and maybe inform us of some things that occurred or in the finance, or excuse me, when it went before the Board of Finance that you would want us to be aware of.
Okay.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, I'll try to take them step by step. When I went before the Board of Finance, the mayor had sent out a memo to all department heads sometime last fall. I followed it to the T. She instructed us to submit a budget that was not a penny more than last year's. So we submitted a budget that was slightly less, not a whole lot less, but less than last year's. And when I left the Board of Finance, they actually added something to my budget. And that put me a little over, but I just want to let go on the record. I submitted a budget that was slightly less. What they did is they added a deputy chief position, which I didn't fund, not because I didn't need. I do need. This is not a one-person job. Agencies smaller than us, our neighbors, have two deputies or assistants. So they funded that, which I appreciated. The way they funded it, I appreciate what they did very much. If it was to be funded, I would approach it a little differently. If you look at my budget, they defunded one of our patrol officer positions and used that. So approximately, about $66,000 or 60, depending on where they took it, and put the balance, added the balance of that to pay for a deputy chief salary. Where I would have done it, if I may, is I would have defunded one of the lieutenant positions, which is about $23,000 more, so it would be a savings to the budget, and put that patrol officer position back, because then we keep the officer on the street. That lieutenant's position in my organizational structure is a not essential. In the structure that I set up, I have five lieutenants. Works best. There's a sixth one. It's vacant right now. So if the deputy chief position was to be filled, and you need to take that money from a position, I would take it from that vacant lieutenant's position and not from a vacant patrolman's position. If that all makes sense.
Okay. So I think I do see where
it'd be listed. The vacant lieutenant position is under the Traffic Bureau. There's a typo there. I was just looking at it. It says it's the top line under traffic, and it's said sergeant. But if you read over on the line, it'll say lieutenant. I'm looking at the Uniform Traffic Division.
Yep, hang on. I'm trying to find the page. There we go. Because I was looking in the budget line items. Maybe it is.
I just lost my page. There we go. Traffic Safety Bureau.
It's easier for me to do it from here.
In the budget book I have, it would be page 115.
Yeah, I see it.
So it says patrol sergeant in parentheses, but that's a police lieutenant position, if you read across.
Okay. I'll find it.
And then if what they defunded was line item 121, vacant number 10.
Yes. And what do you have under, well, that's okay. That's great. I think we all know the general the general request.
Yeah. So in presenting the budget, I made it as streamlined as I possibly could. In recognizing the city's fiscal situation, talking with our good friends in finance in the mayor's office, the and seeing where we're going in the next few years, contract was settled, and so that I have some salary considerations. What I'm recommending is that we are staffed at 169, not the 172 that you see in front of you. So that would be three less patrol officer positions. I did talk with the cops office in DC about this because I was concerned about some grant funding. Explain the fiscal realities of the city and what we need to do to plan ahead. What I need to show is that these are real reductions, and they are. Not supplanting, not trying to hide positions. These are actual reductions across the board.
Okay, so what you're saying is that we can reduce to 169.
169 works
total.
For us? Yes, total. Total sworn.
And currently what we have in front of us is 172.
That's right.
Okay. And is that what your original budget was submitted?
The original budget, all these conversations were going on at the time. I submitted a budget for the 172.
Okay.
Explained everything I was doing to try to save. I'm trying to be as fiscally responsible as I can. I think as a department head, that's what you expect from me. And at the same time, provide the service that you expect from me. And these numbers work. We can make them work. As we speak here today, we're at 158. On Friday, it'll go to 168 because we have 10 starting in the academy, but you won't see those officers for 9 months. There'll be 6 months in the academy, 9 months of field training, so it takes an awful long time. During those 9 months, I expect 5 to 7 retirements. So it's we're always trying to get there. You never quite get there, but that's the goal. Those are the numbers at work. We run 5 shifts a day in patrol every day, and with those numbers, we can get it done. Yeah, I'd love to come in here and tell you I need 200 cops. I mean, that's the reality, but I know that's completely irresponsible on my part.
All right, I found under Traffic Bureau the patrol sergeant, which they wanted to fund. And you're just saying then you need just one other sworn other sworn officer in patrol.
What they did is, which I appreciated, is I did not fund myself the deputy chief, but I did tell them, and other testimony was provided, that that's something that's needed.
We
would go to it next year. We would come back to it after I left for the evening. They added it in, which I do appreciate. But they funded it by taking some funding away from the patrolman's position.
Okay, I gotcha. Okay, that's all for my questions.
Thank you, Alderwoman. Alderman Giantonio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, thanks for coming out tonight. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
I'm looking at on page 95 of the big budget book, the revenue side. Where did the money that you guys write for like infractions go? Does that go somewhere else to the general fund and not to you? Where does that go?
Doesn't come to me.
Yeah.
It all goes to the state.
Most of it. I think some of it might come back to the city.
Okay.
Through some state funding. That doesn't come to us.
Okay.
There's some things that get funded. Jim was talking about some funds before, maybe some of the 911 funding. It might go full circle like that.
Okay.
It doesn't offset my budget.
Parking tickets we get to keep, though, right?
No.
Parking tickets?
No. No, the parking revenue, that's Mr. Pellegrino's.
That's what I'm saying, but the city gets.
Oh, the city gets, yeah.
Yeah.
Won't reflect in my budget.
I'm talking the city in general, not the.
Parking tickets, yeah, city ordinances, certainly. State infractions.
Okay.
Yeah.
But moving violations go to the state.
Yeah, parking tickets are the city's.
Why? Okay. That's probably another conversation. Thanks, Chief.
I know.
You had a question about an administrative position before?
Me? No. No. I see that. Actually, it does show, and I thought that's where the 50,252, it says, in just general administration reduction of one full-time admin clerk chief position.
Yeah, that's in my admin office, and that's where payroll's done. And I don't disagree at all with the direction of that. The problem is that the way our payroll is done is probably somewhat antiquated, and I think that's what the city is seeing. And if we could automate it, streamline it, computerize it, it would be more efficient. But right now we don't have that in place. So that's an actual person. That would be a layoff.
That would be a layoff.
Yeah, that's not a vacant position.
So you're saying currently at this time, that is a position that you feel is necessary? Or are you saying
it
that over
be,
a period of time
it can
it
be
will
it can be improved upon? It's the same systems are in place that have been in place for many decades. Pencils and erasers. So I know there's more efficient means. Mr. Donnelly, I think, has left the room. I know he was testing some software for scheduling payroll. But right now, the payroll is done by a person, and a lot of it's done longhand. And so there are improvements that can be made there with changing the systems. If that position is eliminated, probably the same system will stay in place for now, because there's no safety net there. And the other folks in the office will have to pick up that work.
That's what I was going to ask. If this goes into effect, what are you going to do? And also, with regards to that, is there new technology that needs to be purchased for that change to occur with regards to payroll?
Yes, but it's getting folks trained to use it, and that's been a bit of an issue.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you for consideration.
Mr. DeMeo.
Oh, I was going to say, please.
Can I say something about police?
Mr. Perugini.
Thank you. I've come the past 2 days as a resident just to experience the whole situation. But I wanted to say with the PD, there's other stuff that's missing as well, because the contract got ratified after the mayor's proposed budget. So it doesn't show any of the salary increases that will be due for fiscal year 16. So I wanted to move that in, take it out of contingency, do what the chief said, reduce the positions from 172 down to 169. I could move the vacant lieutenant. If it's okay with the common council, I'll work on that and send it to you so you see it, and I'll work with the chief on that. So,
through you, Mr. Chairman, I personally would appreciate that, Mr. Perugini, if you would do that and share that with the council. And if also you could identify the admin, I'm just saying to show this, for the full-time admin clerk and where that money was coming from and where that money would move back into if this council decides to keep that position in place.
Sure. You want to know which specific full-time salary account it was in?
Yes, so that if there is unanimous consent, or I should say consensus, with regards to that position, at least we know where that position resides in the budget.
Yeah, because I believe in the mayor's budget, they didn't assign it to a specific person, but just to one of the possible three. It all would in turn go into bumping issues and.
Yeah, it's a 5121 account, so.
Yeah, I'll get you the exact one and.
Okay, great.
Okay. Yeah, that was the only thing, because with personnel schedules, I have to make sure it matches, flows through, so we have.
Okay, so it looks like we have some give and take there too. And also, when you do that, you can identify the difference in the deputy chief, and that would be helpful, I think, too, what the chief had identified. Thank you. I'm assuming that would be.
That'd be really beneficial. Yeah, that would be beneficial. Absolutely.
Yeah, just so, because it's going to be a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving pieces, I just want to simplify it, because ultimately, when I put the book together, the personnel schedules have to match the full-time salaries and flow through, so.
Thank you very much.
That was all I wanted to say. Thank you.
We appreciate that.
Chief Renalta?
Does anybody have questions for Mr. Ray?
Good evening, everyone.
That's okay.
Do you have questions or do you want to diatribe?
Please, sir.
Do you have any particular questions, though, or do you?
Are there any particular questions on the floor?
No. I don't have any particular questions. What I wanted to do was to, at least it was my intent, to allow any department head that wanted to address the council for any needs within their budget or just any clarification or anything they wanted to specifically discuss with us or make us aware of, that this would be the forum to do it. So.
If there's anything you have, Chief.
if there's anything specific, so it wasn't a mandatory that you know, I tried to communicate that,
yes,
at least,
yep,
to you,
thank
and,
you
and the folks, but to give you the opportunity, because this is the opportunity that you have to for us
thank
to
you
be aware of your budget and any needs that you have that aren't being met.
Okay. I'll just go on record to say if Chief Fordwell heads towards that 200 police officers, I'll take a few of those. Just sort of crumbs.
Cross training?
Yeah. So, thank you, though, for the opportunity. I appreciate it. I guess just I'll try to move through this quickly, but just as a backdrop, you know, and I think there's been this fire department has shrunk in the last 5 years, and I can give you a handout later showing some of that. And just as a, you know, again, as a backdrop, because I understand the city's financial situation, but our budget was $12.8 million in 2008, and this year, well, what's proposed is $12.4 million. So even if that were to increase, it still would still be below, you know, 7 years ago. So, and I don't take credit for that. I wasn't here for most of that time. But what's happened in that time is the closing of the rescue company, reduction of engine company staffing from 4 firefighters to 3 per shift. And again, those were contractual negotiations. So going back to actually the first Mayor Stewart in some of these cases, which has resulted in a 25% daily reduction. You know, we throw around numbers of the size of the fire department, but, and I know we in the police are maybe apples and oranges the way we're organized, but us for its daily shift strength, it really is what providing protection to the public. So that's decreased 25% in the last 5 years. And I say that because whether it's in conversations with the fire board, finance, mayor, or yourselves, I always try to separate the fact of the money side of things from protection. And I know those that they confluence there because one affects the other. But the city has saved a tremendous amount of money with the changes that have happened in the fire department in the last 5 years. But I believe protection has been reduced. I know that's something that's a fact of life we have to live with. But, you know, tremendous amount of money is being saved. So, which is a good thing, which has helped stabilize the budget. So, and with the recent contract negotiations, the 139 number, the proverbial 139 number, which has been in the contract, which is just a number of bodies, that's coming down to 122. So we're living with the 122 from now until January 1st, where the agreement is to go back up to 126, and then it will go back to 130 the following year, and then top off there. So that's an ultimate reduction of 9 positions. So I say that because going back a few years, if you look at the overtime situation, as was mentioned previously, you know, with Mr. Donnelly, is as you have less people, you have more overtime. So going back several years when we had 4 firefighters per company, if someone took the day off, we used that 4th person either on that company to fill that spot, or if someone took a day off at another station, we would send that firefighter down the road to fill in for the overtime. So the salary accounts were higher, overtime was lower because we had what we call detailed people in the system. Now as we move to this lower staffing model, which is much more efficient, because the greatest efficiency of the whole system here is because all firefighters get straight time for the overtime that they work, unless they're past a government threshold, which is a formula that goes over a 24-day period. But only about, right now, about 7% of our overtime is at that rate. With the higher overtime coming next year, it'd probably be closer to 10 to 12%. So it's still a huge saving for the city. But as where you come down in numbers, in strength, we don't have people to assign as details to fill overtime. So basically every spot, and we're at that position now, we're at 122, but we're actually in bodies, we're at 120. So anyone that takes a day off, vacation time, sick time, is automatically filled with overtime. So that's only going to, you know, we're not in the crisis position that the police were in a few years ago, but we're in that position. We're at minimum strength, and we're actually heading south. So that by the time our people that we'll hire this summer get into action next winter and spring, you know, we're going to actually be below staffing. So overtime will increase. So I say that as a preface to the overtime line item in the operations section of the budget. So we were allocated $1.7 million this year. We're about 93% expended right now. In June is a heavy month. We are saving in salaries because of retirement. So we'll probably you'll be able to transfer money into that. But again, we started the year probably in the range closer to 130. So we had more people in the system at the beginning of this current budget year, and we've drifted down as more people have retired. So that, again, that reduced the salary account, or what we were using on the salary account, but slowly been increasing overtime. Again, I say this all in preparation to say that having the same amount of overtime in that account this year versus last year seems not sustainable, as they would say. We had originally asked for $2.1 million, and it was reduced to finance at $2 million and then to 1.7. So even all things being equal, from last year, just with the raises alone, you know, probably be $50,000, $60,000 on the contractual raises, as it affects just the overtime budget, and that's without the vacancies that we have this year that we didn't have last year. So I understand your positions, but I would say that's the biggest issue. I have a couple other things I'd like to mention, but that's probably the biggest hole, I guess, that I would ask to be addressed.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, if
Paul
I may.
Alderman Belinsky.
In the overtime account, and I'm not sure if it comes from the salary. Well, let me start here. How many firefighters potentially, and maybe you know this number, maybe you don't, but how many firefighters do we have that could potentially retire, that have enough years to retire?
Well, Mr. Hassett, during negotiation, I think he was saying 40%. I guess, and I have to say that I'm not sure of the exact number. We don't tend to have the same issue with the police department. Police seems to have much more of a routine turnover, people leaving sort of at 20 years. We have people that stay in the department longer. So I think with some of the contractual changes, especially with the insurance situation, that if people don't retire now, and we're getting some inquiries for additional, but not, you know, the large scale.
So you don't think there'll be a bit, you don't think there will be, you're not aware of a big rush of folks retiring, and you're not aware of anyone who right now has, you know, been inquiring to the point to where you think they would retire?
Well, we do have some. So we actually have, we've had several people leave in the last few months. And one of our inspectors just retired last week. And as far as we know, we have two more people retiring in June.
Okay,
and I only say that with some confidence because I think, you know, usually when people are starting to think about leaving, they ask for their numbers and retirement payouts and things like that. You could ask us the third week of June, say, and you're going to go to the last week of June, but typically people don't do that.
And that's why I ask is because typically, you know, the contracts are written where there's a certain number of days and people have them and they get a payout on those days, correct? Like on sick time and
yes.
all that, whatever it is.
Yes.
So this was where my question was getting at. That payment comes from your salary or from your overtime account, doesn't it?
Salary, I believe.
From your salary account.
Salary, yeah. That was a question I asked early on in, when I came to this position, and I think Mr. Perugini enlightened me to say it was not a budgeted item.
So instead of having like a retirement line item where some do have a retirement line item that payouts come out of, yours comes out of your salary. So you not only have to pay for the salary, which continues on because you'll hire someone in that position, but you also have to pay out whatever that retiree has coming to them.
Yes. And sometimes it works out. We had a lieutenant retire last September and then a captain in October. And I guess the way I looked at it is, you know, they all each had the rest of the residual time in the year was budgeted for their salary. So we're really sort of paying them their salary for the rest of the year. But if people that retire in May or June, we're still paying the whole year that was budgeted. And then on top of it, we're handing them a check for, you know, maybe $20,000. So, yes, and I can see the argument for not budgeting for it because it's unknown. But at the same time, it's, you know, you're talking, I mean, last year was probably $150,000.
But firefighters don't have to give, they can come in tomorrow and say, I'm retiring.
Yes.
They have to give you no notice.
Yes. And other than the idea of hiring people, and, you know, a month wouldn't really help you because you can't, you know, hire somebody and put them in position in that time anyway. And so when they walk out the door, if it's depending on the staffing level, you're paying overtime to fill that. So unless it was, tell us a year in advance, I'm not sure if, you know, the 2 weeks or 4 weeks would really have any substantial role on a budget side of things.
When you have a list, well, I guess it depends on, this is where lateral transfer might help though, right? Because previously, even if you had a list and they hadn't gone through academy, then it's still, how many weeks in academy?
14.
14. So it would still be, if let's say you hired somebody in 2 weeks, it'd still be like, the best would be like 16 weeks that potentially you could get a body in that firehouse.
Yes.
But with lateral transfer, it's possible if you have candidates that could be shortened.
Yes.
And that might help.
Yes.
So that's good. Okay.
So just let me, because I have your ear, bring up one issue that we don't do that I think is an important issue. We're going to be working with the police department, such as New Britain EMS did, to take advantage of their knowledge and past use of field training officers to implement a program like that in the fire department. We have not done a good job in the past of assimilating new people into the organization. Sometimes we just hire them, they go to the academy, and then we stick them, you know, in a station with, you know, where the vacancy is. Sometimes, some supervisors are better than others, and people get off to a better start in some situations than others. So the intent is to train people to be specialized in and have a structure for bringing people into the organization, going through a structured procedure in the first few months. Such as the police do, and again, New Britain EMS has implemented a similar system to make sure that person gets off to the right start and is a productive employee for the next, 20 years of their career. So how that affects us, though, is we would do that and assign it. So if we take Bob and assign him to Lieutenant Smith, and he's a new firefighter under our system, potentially, even if that was a, even when we go up staffing to the 126, we would have at least one company that would have detail people. So the idea is we assign Bob to, or Lieutenant Belinsky, say, and then Bob gets sent down the road to Lieutenant Salerno for the night because somebody's off. And so they'd be bouncing around the whole city. So my intent would be to, you know, delay their ability to be detailed and also keep them permanent on that company for at least a couple of months. Would serve as similar to the PD, where they're with the consistent officer for the initial months of their training. And that's not something we have done. With reduced staffing to three people, the other side of that is to not them have sort of be on the bubble of being the only firefighter on the company. You know, with four people on the company, basically two firefighters and the officer would stretch a hose line to the third floor, you know, a fire on the third floor. With only three, it's the officer and the firefighter. And if that firefighter is just out of rookie school, really he's in some ways operating independently, which is really dangerous.
That's what I was going to say. And then when you have that program, then it would be a four-man. They would be in a four-man company or four firefighter company for the time of their training, their field training. So then they could learn from an experienced officer.
Yes.
So the experienced firefighter and the new firefighter could then go in to fight that fire, and they could then train them along the way and guide them.
So, and so the budget impact there is, you know, it's not that it's costing more because they're already on the payroll. It's really we're extending their training to the point where, you know, we're waiting for them to be fully functioning so that we can start to save overtime. So it would delay the saving of, you know, in that sense. But to me, it's a very important program that we have to start. I think it was always needed, but it's needed even more now on the sense of, on the safety side, because of the reduced staffing. But we always needed it because we've created problems in the past of, like I said, how we brought people into the organization.
Understood. Thank you for that. I'm glad to...
Okay.
Any other questions on the overtime or...
Anybody on the floor would like to ask this time?
I would just like to clarify for folks, and I think the chief said that it is an overtime line item, but firefighters get straight time for overtime, like you said, until they pass the Fair Labor Standard Act law.
Yes.
And then they'll only get time and a half for those hours over within a 24-hour period over those hours.
Right. So we pay everyone straight time, and then if, at the end of the month, basically, if you've hit that threshold, then we go back and pay you from, we pay you in arrears the following check of the time and a half that the city owes you. So some of that's a function of when people take time off. So the heavy months when people are using vacation time sort of in March and in June for holiday time, that's when we seem to see it the most. But then as you have more vacancies, it sort of raises the tide where people are working more and more people are likely to hit that threshold.
Okay, thank you.
All right, if I could just point out a couple of other
line
items, just that I would ask you to sort of stay away from, or I think it's really critical that they not be reduced. Our physicals, we had an issue with OSHA last year where we weren't really keeping up with our physicals in a timely manner. Ideally, we give, because it's a contractual issue and it's also an OSHA issue, that we are giving a physical every 2 years to members of the department. So basically every year, half the department gets physicals. We're sort of behind this year also. We're just giving physicals now. That's why you don't see it expended. But we're actually going to have to roll some of that into next year and steal from that to stay on that schedule. But that's about the minimum that we need for to keep that program going. The training, I hate the name of that line item, training and conferences, because there's not really conferences that come out of that. That's our daily training, the supports training of firefighters throughout the department. There's an increase. We've been at about 50,000 the last several years. That's all training in the department. And I requested 100,000, it was reduced to 70. Now that increase was anticipating sending people to the State Fire Academy at about $6,000 a person. I understand the lateral transfer situation will affect that, but the extra 50 was for those candidates, which will probably be in the range of 8 or 9 right now that we would send. So cutting to 70 is basically cutting that budget to 20. I would love to ask for an increase, but, you know, beyond the 70, but I would at least ask for no further reductions. The utility line items, heat and gas and electricity, you know, we've been doing the programs with World Energy, where we've replaced out all the boilers at Station 1 and Station 2, onto all LED lighting. That's reducing our monthly bills, but because we're using the bonded money that was allocated a couple of years ago to do some of these improvements. We're paying, out of a $90,000, you know, project, we're maybe paying $40,000, and then that 50 is a loan on our monthly bill, which we're trying to be about the same as what the savings was. So we're trying to get that right, but until we know how much they're coming down, we just ask that those line items not be cut to give us some degree of certainty.
Chair.
Alderman Smyrna.
If I might, this is like really, it's out of the box thought, but we're looking at utilities.
Yes, sir.
The Board of Education has taken on, and the city has done a considerable amount in solar efforts, both in the water department and with the schools. Has there been any thought about that possibility or any assessment, I don't know, of if they were to do that sort of solar effort on the firehouses, could that be a long-term savings? I mean, not take place now, but when I'm thinking about that, we're looking at the cost of electricity, gas, and oil. You know, we really have to address that from an municipal point of view long-term. Has there been, and could have been thought about in the mayor's office as well, but I'm thinking now, if a department says we've got X number of facilities, if we were to be able to accomplish that, is that a consideration, or is it on your long list or short list? Or?
Yes and no. I'm all
good
for
answer.
It. I'm all for it. No, and it's definitely in consideration. I guess the only issue I think would be because our stations are the age that they are, and typically from my own home and things, you know, reading about solar is that, you know, you want to make sure you're putting on, if not a new building, at least a new roof. And my only consideration or thought would be, as we go forward, the stations need such major work that I'm not sure if I, you know, want to put the solar panels on beforehand. But I think it should be part of any renovation project for any station or a new station. And actually at Station 4, which I would put on the front burner of any renovation, I actually, in some of the write-ups you'll see in the capital improvement plan, I included not only solar, but geothermal, heating and cooling. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good to think. I just, something that comes up when we like look at increasing costs.
Yes.
How we try to manage that in every department as well as, throughout the municipality, yes. So.
Alderman Giansonia.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, through you. Thank you, Chief, for coming tonight. Quick question, you had mentioned employee physicals, and I see that's $35,000 line item. Is there a reason why we do that program outside of like the firefighters' normal insurance? I mean, is there a reason that we have to do that and pay for that? And then kind of a follow-up question to that is, I noticed in the police department, their line item for employee physicals is only $16,000, and there's more police officers than firemen, so I'm just trying to figure out where those costs come from.
Well, I can't speak to
to
the police completely. A couple of those, I know recently there's been conversations and now it's coming to fruition as far as moving our physicals from Alliance or Hospital Central Connecticut Occupational Health over the line there in Plainville to Concentra on West Main. New hires were going to MedWorks. We were going to Alliance for our physicals. Worker comp, I think was kind of split sometimes. So the intent, I think, of the mayor's office was to sort of consolidate things, to streamline it. I know, so I sat in conversations with the police about some of these issues, and it seemed that their physicals were more, I guess, basic from just some of the conversations that I heard in those in that room. That could be part of it, so I don't know what the cost per physical. And I'm not sure if they're annual physicals or if they're doing them as often as we're required to. Okay. So other than that, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I mean, ours have been running, you know, close to $400. So, and we were behind, so actually we were actually going back a year and a half. We put everyone through, so now we're just trying to get back on the cycle. And as far as the insurance, it's a requirement of the employer, so I'm not sure if we could, you know, obligate you to use your insurance. We're going to send you to a physical and then say, put it on.
Self-insured anyway.
Put it on your, you know, on your insurance. So,
okay.
I don't think we could do that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
So you don't know in those physicals, this physical line item, we used to do physicals half and half. So we do half 1 year, half the next, half 1 year, half the next, so that they'd have them every other year. Is that still the cycle?
Yes.
Okay. And I know that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know that heart and hypertension is like I don't know if it's as big a thing in the police department as it is in the fire department. So I thought there was also special testing that was required at the time, but you don't recall what that is.
Is part of the physical?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a you know, there's a national standard on the physical. We should be doing it. We're not meeting all of it, but we've moved in that direction to be comprehensive. But I mean, the contract language is that the physical be focused on heart and hypertension issues.
That's where the language came from. Stress testing.
Well, stress test is not routinely part of it. I mean, actually, Chief Carr had started to do that. And the thing is, it's very expensive.
Okay.
It was only referred if it was up to the doctor as far as a person being referred for a stress test. Everyone gets an EKG, but not a stress test.
Okay.
So I think last year maybe we had a ballpark of maybe 10 or 12 people that got referred for stress tests, which are going to Lexington Cardiology, which for like $250 a piece. So, you know, if you look at the rest of the process, it's not doubling, but it's greatly, you know, increasing it.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion?
Just one last quick comment is on our vehicle maintenance. Poorly named line item, vehicle damage. It's, you know, 1% of that is used on vehicle damage. We're not getting in that many accidents, thank goodness. Is that it had been, you know, at 60,000, we're about 95% expended in that line item right now because of the cost of repairs, especially as our apparatus is aging. So that was, that made it through the process so far at $70,000. I would just ask you to please keep it there. And the on the topic of apparatus, our new ladder apparatus arrived late last Friday. We've been in training, factory training, representatives training all the shifts that will work on the apparatus. The last few days will finish tomorrow on Friday. If any of you would like to take a look at it, it's down at Station 5 at the Mechanics Bureau. So, and the city has paid for it. We own it. And we're processing the request from the government for $965,000 for the government share of that. So that's the good news.
Chief, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mr. DeMayo, if there's anything you'd like to address, please come for us.
And Isaac.
Who was sleeping for a while.
So sweet. Look at his little face. He's like, oh.
I'm so jealous of him.
He was so comfortable.
Yeah. I'm so jealous of him because he gets more sleep than I do.
I know. There you go.
But good evening, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity.
I'll be very brief. Just want to first invite all of you and remind you that tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at Fairview Cemetery is our Memorial Day services. And then, of course, our Memorial Day parade is the following Saturday, and the monument tour is Saturday also. On May 29th, Friday, you're all invited at 11:30 for the grand opening of Go Ape at A.W. Stanley Park. And then, of course, June 20th is the Rose Garden Festival. So you don't want to put those right on your calendar. You don't want to miss them. First thing I wanted to talk about is in the Recreation Division. Last year, we talked about funding half of the Recreation Supervisor's position, which is located in the Union of 818. That was the old Barbara Zakreski job, and she unfortunately got sick and had to leave. And I'm a little bit reluctant to say this in a public meeting, but what I've done is taken all her responsibilities and divided them up amongst the 1303 union members and part-timers. And unfortunately, that's not a long-term fix. And I'm just, you know, although they're very cooperative and they're team players and all that kind of stuff, in these kinds of times, it's just an uncomfortable position to be in because we're opening the door for grievances and we're opening the door for losing grievances. So as much as my staff is fabulous and I've surrounded myself with the greatest people, we're wearing them out bad. Mike Pastor, who fortunately was a part-timer who did a lot of her work, was promoted or got the full-time position at Fairview Cemetery, so he's no longer in our office. So we're in a critical position, and we're doing much more, as you probably all realize, that the vision of this city is to bring more people here and have more special events, and we're just banging them out every month, every week. So it's difficult. So I bring your attention to trying to fund, if you have the ability. It's about $58,000, I believe, for a rec supervisor's job in the Recreation Division. And they've taken on a great deal more work than ever. So that's that. That's the general fund. If I may, I just want to bring to your attentions, you know, I hate to be negative Nelly in this particular case, but I'd like to bring to your attention some capital improvement projects. Because it's necessary, it's so important for you guys to understand the shoes that I'm standing in right now. First thing is, it's Memorial Day, and many of you are going to catch people, your constituents are going to say to you, why isn't the water on at Fairview Cemetery to water our plants?
I did find one that worked.
Yeah, the west side,
yes,
some of the west
right
side
next to the works. Busway work.
Right. The east side is closed down. And, you know, the pipes are galvanized pipes underground. They were put in about 250 years ago. They're 5 feet underground so that they are lower than the frost line. And what's happening is they're just disintegrating. And we've had experts look at it. We've had Ken Marzi from the water department. And the recommendations from both experts and in-house is that we can't do this anymore because we've been digging big holes. We use rubber, connect it to plastic, fix it right here, and 10 feet we cover it up and pave the road again. And that's the other thing, is they're all under the road because they wanted to leave more space for grave sites. So it becomes so expensive. And 10 feet down the road, it breaks there, and we go down. So unfortunately, there's no cheap fix. I think the fix is to bring in an irrigation company and put plastic pipes in potable, like about a foot underground, 18 inches underground pool pipe, but the fix is like $100,000. I don't have an exact number, but I do want you to know why the water's turned off and why we can't really fix it easily. A.W. Stanley Pool, we only have two pools now, A.W. and Willowbrook Pool, and I think it'd be a shame to close one of those pools during a hot summer, but I am fearful. I've been telling you this, but I know for a fact now there's not much time left on A.W. Stanley's pool concrete. It's just crumbling. Every year, our lifeguards do first aid on all the kids' feet for cutting their feet with chunks of concrete coming out, and we're losing water all the time. It's just darn near impossible. The solution, in my opinion, would be to bond some money to fix it, probably in the area of $3 million. And close the waiting pool, put up an 8-foot fence so it's safe, build a new pool from the waiting pool, wrap it around the building and head towards the
the street, it probably would take two summers. So you wouldn't close a pool, you'd keep it open. The alternative to not doing that is ultimately we're going to have an emergency, we're going to close the pool, and a lot of people are going to be upset. I think we get 16,000 visits in 8 weeks at A.W. Stanley Pool. So I bring that to your attention. And on a nice note, I will bring to you, I'm now with this reorganization, I have 10 divisions, and one of them is the Senior Center. And at that commission level, I think Alderman Platosh and Alderman Black has attended some of the commission meetings at the Senior Center, and their desire is to put together a greenhouse, and the greenhouse would attach to the building in the parking lot area, and it would be an opportunity for seniors to plant plants and flowers. We also talked about intergenerational, bringing the after-school kids with the seniors and planting mums, say, or Easter lilies. And at the holidays, maybe the seniors plant them and grow them, and the kids sell them in the schools as a fundraiser. We talked about vets getting involved. And we also talked about seniors and kids planting, and some of the plants be used in hanging baskets downtown and also in the planters downtown. And they would be proud of it, and they could brag about how they helped the city with some of the beautification programs downtown. That program, we've written grants and submitted them to four or five major agencies, Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, American Savings, New Britain Foundation, and a couple private foundations. But with no money, everybody asks, what skin in the game do you have? The cost is about $400,000, and it includes handicap accessibility, so you could have people with disabilities with wheelchairs at wheelchair level being able to plant. But I need some money basically to show these funders that we have some skin in the game. So I was hoping that maybe at LOSIP level or something like that, and I know sidewalks and streets are important and all that, but if it was in your ability to do so, if you could maybe fund half of it, maybe $200,000, and I'm hearing that CDBG, there might be some talk that in the bricks and mortar part, they might have $80,000 there. If I could get a little start, I think I could prove to some funders to give us the rest of it. So that's my little pitch right now for that. So that's pretty much the capital improvement program that I bring to your attention. But I understand the financial woes. I get it. I totally get it. And everybody's struggling. I can see that. So I'll open the mic to any questions if you have any.
Alderman Belinsky.
I don't know that. Well, I do have a question, but I just wanted to say before the question that I have seen those programs before, the gardening programs for seniors and just in general, accessible gardening, if you will.
Yep.
And I think that would be a wonderful thing to be able to bring to the Senior Center. I commend you for that idea, and I think that, you know, a lot of the people down there would enjoy that. Clarification on your on the first, I didn't want to interrupt you, but with regards to the salary, did you say that was, is that the full-time salary, the $63,000? Is that what you had said?
I didn't look at
63,529. Okay, was the difference that could,
I thought it was
full-time.
58. Yep. Okay.
Okay, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, 63.
Full-time salary. That's probably in your recreation program.
Yes.
Okay. That was just what I wanted to clarify.
And I could get you, we have like a 3-page proposal that we've been sending out to funders. I could get that out to you guys in regards to the greenhouse. It explains everything.
That would be nice. I would be interested. Okay. Potentially others would as well. Can you tell me with regards to the Disabilities Commission, it looks like there is a department request of 26,240 and a Board of Finance recommendation of 15,000. What the impact is there? And why the cut to 15? It's retained at 15, so I just, through the mayor's budget.
Yes. And I think I can live with that. We're trying, with the new reorg in every single different division, we're trying to bring, you know, new life to the program, and they've been stripped down pretty hard. But the idea there was to reinstate some of the handy dial-a-ride at nights and weekends and for church and synagogues. All that got eliminated totally a few years ago, And I think it's so vitally important. As we know, the Dial-A-Ride works at the senior center, but we use the same vans and stuff, and we could utilize that resource that's sitting there doing nothing and getting them to provide some visits or some socialization, some shopping, what have you, on nights and weekends, just a couple nights. We're also, just so you know, are planning as a pilot program, now that I have the disabilities and seniors together, what we're going to do on Wednesday nights, we're taking advantage of the concerts at Walnut Hill Park, and we're going to pick up 12 seniors or people with disabilities and bring them every Wednesday night in July to the Shell, and they'll get a hot dog and popcorn and a soda, watch the concert, and then get driven back. So we're using that as an experiment, and hopefully if that budget gets passed, that's where some of the money will go also.
I think that also would be having a mother who's 87 years old,
right.
And I see the pleasure, yep, that just getting out and socializing with people, you know, she just loves grocery shopping because,
yep,
she can just talk to people,
yep,
you know, she's alone a lot. So
it's so vital, and until you throw your keys on the table for a day and try not operating without a car, it's important.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. So, okay, thank you very much, Mr. DeMayo.
Any further discussion?
Alderman, Mr. DeMayo, how big of a greenhouse do you guys want to build for $400,000?
Well, it also includes heating and cooling. It's a whole, like, it's kind of like a building, really. It's I can give you the in that when I email you that thing, it has the details. Off the top of my head, I think it's 50 feet long, and it might be 20 feet wide, but it has to meet the ADA standards. We had two design on West Main Street engineering firm do it all out for us. But it's a decent size to be able to provide vegetables and plants and a variety of activity. But it also includes $400,000 includes, if you go behind City Hall, behind the Senior Center, the ramp that goes to that door, again, I hate at a public meeting to say this as the ADA coordinator, but it doesn't meet the 1-to-12 ratio by law. So I would redo that and put a few new parking spaces. That's included in the $400,000, and put a ramp all the way on the left-hand side and go right in, and it would catch the greenhouse in the new entrance to the Senior Center. So it's all in one project.
All right, thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Salerno.
Yes, through you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. DeMayo, thanks again for being here, as always. In terms of the greenhouse, and I certainly support the concept, I believe that the CDBG fund obviously have been, you know, we're going to vote on that shortly down the road, that's a $80,000. And you said, obviously, it'd be nice to get about $200,000 and sort of it represents a matching fund or,
yeah,
an in-kind from the city in terms of the grant application process. Would it make sense if we were to do something to diminish that amount and still be able to provide that as an enticement to another funding source? When I say, you know, for instance, if we scaled it down to less than $100,000 or $100,000 versus $200,000, and whether we scale down the cost of the greenhouse, I don't know, but just in terms of that conservative compromise, and might,
yeah,
in the long term work out better. But I mean, would anything, that be doable? You know the sources better,
right,
than I do. So
No, anything is going to help, because the feedback I just got from the Hartford Foundation was they're saying, you got $0 up here. You know, you want $400,000 and you've got no money of the city's money. And I go, well, yeah, I'm begging right now. So, you know, you don't get anywhere that way. So whatever you could do would help my efforts in trying to secure the rest of it.
And also, we can always promise that once the budget is improved, that we'll make sure that we keep the maintenance of the greenhouse. I'm here.
Yeah.
No, I'm just thinking in terms of that position that people will, I agree, they're going to look at it and say, well, look, here's where we are financially, but, you know, we're willing and certain there's the earnest support of the idea. Mm. I think it is a good concept.
Any further discussion? Any questions and comments? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. DeMayo.
Thank you, Mr. DeMayo.
Mr. Wolf, was
thank
there
you,
anything
Isaac.
Thing that you wanted to shed light on? Nothing at all? You sure? Okay. Alderman Belinsky, was there anything that you wanted to...
I didn't, other than I wanted to thank Mr. Perugini for being here and for offering to assist on the...
Thank you, sir.
With the items, and potentially, what, maybe a question through you to Mr. Perugini?
Mr. Perugini, would you come forward?
No. I just wanted to ask for the form. I know you're going to do some investigation and identification of some of the asks with regards to the police department and the salaries and the pluses and the minuses there.
Yeah.
And I just, and so are you going to be providing it potentially in the same format here, only on another sheet that might have council changes on it?
Yes, if you'd like, I'd...
I think that would be
the
helpful.
Next part on that is the council piece. If you want me to put it in, I'll do the part I'm taking out of contingency, the increase, decrease to all the full-time in the police.
Can you also, and that was going to be my other question, there were a couple other requests this evening with regards to telecommunications.
Okay.
It doesn't necessarily mean, just for the other members, it doesn't necessarily mean that that is what the council is going to act upon.
Okay.
But it would be helpful to me to see the update on the council update sheet with those items identified or parsed out.
Sure, if you want me to, would it just be the three dispatchers in the...
The items that I had...
What other ones besides the PD?
Yeah, the items that were potentially in the salaries were the telecommunications, as well as those the police items, and also Mr. DeMeo's
The rec supervisor.
The rec supervisor position, and also in the police department, the admin position that was eliminated.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that way we would just have all that information. Should we choose to act upon it, we already have the account numbers that would belong to. Okay?
Yeah, I can do that. The police one, I do it so it balances. The other ones, I'll show what the dispatch increase would be, what the recreation increase would be. I don't know if you want me to do the offset with contingency just for the time being until you...
Fine. Until that would be fine.
Okay.
That would be fine, just so that it balances, just show it
yes,
in that respect.
Yes, yeah, yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I didn't have anything else for Mr. Perugini.
Thank you, Mr. Perugini. Oh,
thank
sorry.
Thank you, Mr.
Alderman Salerno.
It's not for you, Mr. Perugini. Thank you again also for being here. It's more of a comment to council members here. I think I heard and it really kind of bothered me. Not what Mr. DeMeo said in the sense that it was a plea, I agree with it. I'm really concerned about the A.W. Stanley status. One of the things that happened to us when we went through the process of bonding was a question of where we would put funding for maintenance of particular or rehabilitation, if you will, of pools. And I did not know, and either I missed the boat on it or didn't pay attention or didn't hear it, but that A.W. Stanley was in the kind of dire straits it is. We were going to place it in another one of the pools, and I think that obviously my concern at the time was that we can't afford to open a third, to rehabilitate a third pool when we can't afford to open it. We can't maintain it with staff. So certainly I think that we should keep in mind that A.W. Stanley really is a priority that we need to take a look at. And I'm sure everybody's thought about it, but I just wanted to say I think it's really important that it's essential not just the people who are be upset about it, but I think for the community to have at least two pools open. So I certainly support that. And thank you for sharing that. Otherwise, I might not have been in one of it on my radar at all.
Yes. Okay. Any further discussion? Thank you, Alderman. Alderwoman Belinsky.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone for being here tonight, and I make a motion to table resolution 33071-1.
Second.
Motion made by Alderwoman Belinsky to retable resolution 33071-1, seconded by Alderman Giantonio.
Yeah, actually, it's not a retable. I think we need to table all three.
All three?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So we need to vote on the first table.
Okay. May I have a motion?
You did?
No, nope, we already did. All those in favor.
Okay, all those in favor.
Aye.
Aye. All
aye.
Those opposed? Alderwoman Valinsky.
Thank you. I make a motion to accept resolution 33072-1.
Second.
Motion made by Alderman Belinsky, seconded by Alderman Giantonio.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to table resolution 33072-1.
Second.
Motion made by Alderman Belinsky, seconded by Alderman Giantonio.
Mr. Chairman, make a motion to accept resolution 33073-1.
Huh? Yeah, we did have the vote on the table.
Oh, did we have the vote?
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
we're just
we did.
Running through this thing, and I wasn't even. I'm sorry.
We did.
Okay.
Do you want to do it again?
Yeah.
No,
please.
We have to.
Just we have to for the second one. I apologize.
That's okay.
Alderwoman, would you?
Did we do the second one?
Yeah.
You said
could
all
you redo
favor,
it, please? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
To table
aye.
The
aye.
Second one, aye.
Yep.
All those opposed? Motion passed.
Now we're doing the third.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to accept resolution 33073-1.
Second.
Motion made by Alderman Belinsky, seconded by Alderman Giantonio. All those in favor signify
no,
by saying
no,
aye.
Nope. 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 Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to table resolution 33073-1.
Second.
We want to vote to accept it.
I second
motion
that.
Made by Alderman Belinsky to table the matter, seconded by Alderman Giantonio. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed.
Mr. Chairman, make motion to adjourn.
Second.
Made by Alderman Belinsky, seconded by Alderman Giantonio. The time is now.
Alderman Sanchez, welcome back.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those
aye.
Opposed.
Aye. Alderman Sanchez, welcome back, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
right
you
back
so
in.
Coming out with
thanks,
your
stuff.
I'm gonna need those
questions
too.
Do you want to
yeah,
piggyback
would,
to your car?
Yeah, I mean, if you got me, I'll accept
you get all that? Yeah, I was gonna say, did you drive?
Oh yeah, I can. Fortunately,
oh,
it was
right
my
leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I did it. It was
so, I heard a few people were making fun of me on Facebook. I don't have Facebook, so I heard I was getting ragged a little bit.
Oh, just.